You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. We continue our candidate conversations with more from the race for insurance commissioner, where we now hear from the incumbent, Democrat Trinidad Navarro. Navarro is seeking a third term after first winning the office in 2016. In 2020, he earned a second term by defeating Republican Julia Pillsbury. A reminder, the candidate conversations here on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. I want to talk about some of these issues that you mentioned and some other ones. And I'll start with kind of one that I'm sure you probably hear a lot about. You know, there have been increases in auto, home insurance and such premiums nationwide recently. Obviously, your office doesn't set those rates. But what role is there for the insurance commissioner to address those cost increases? What do you tell people when they call you and say, like, what is going on? Why are these rates so high? Why are they going up?
Well, the first thing we tell people is to make sure they shop around. I mean, we ask them, how long have you been with your current insurer? And we've had, and I know this sounds like hyperbole, but we've had people who have been with their insurance company for over 50 years. Mm-hmm. That's what the industry wants, a loyal customer. And they raise the rates a little bit every year, right? And people think, well, that's the cost of doing business. In some cases, those rate increases are justified. But, you know, in Delaware, people often will change from Comcast and Verizon because they can save 10 bucks on their cable bill, right? But they don't think about doing that with their homeowners and private auto insurance. So that's the first thing they tell them, shop around. I can't speak to you personally, but I can speak about my home. The value of my home has gone up like 30% in the last couple of years. So, you know, the replacement costs for your home has gone up, right? You know what it costs for a 2x4 today?
A lot.
Almost $10, right? A sheet of plywood is $85, $90. So, you know, when there is a loss at your home and they have to repair it, the cost because of inflation, in large part, is exponentially higher than it was just a few years ago. The cars that we drive today, you know, it used to be, you know, I had an old car in the 80s, you know, I was in high school, and I had to replace the bumper because I was a teenage driver, right? You tend to bump into things. And it was like $200 to replace that bumper, which was a lot of money back then.
Right.
Today, if you have to replace your bumper, in some cases they're totaling the car.
Right.
Because you have the, you know, the cameras and the technology that are built into your bumpers, your windshield, you know, the forward crash warning detectors, mm-hmm. all that stuff is in our cars today. And if you have a EV, you know, like a Tesla, good luck trying to find somebody who can actually service the car, right? Or if the car is damaged. So, you know, the cost associated with repairing homes and cars is just through the roof. And, you know, a more recent example was Hurricane Beryl that hit Texas. Mm-hmm. 100,000 cars or so that flooded out. Total loss. And so people don't realize that the historic fires that they're having right now in Washington, Oregon, and in California have an impact with what we see here in Delaware. And that's why when I mentioned climate and how important that is to me and how important it is to regulators across the country is to sort of see how states are planning for their loss mitigation.
But having said that, I mean, are there – because I wanted to talk a little bit about this. Is there some unique challenges Delaware does face because of climate change, being a, you know, a low-lying state and where it's located, that you as an insurance commissioner and the insurance industry have to think about?
Sure. So that's one of the reasons why the flood mapping was redone recently. Mm-hmm. We've worked with DEMA and FEMA to take a look at how insurance companies are addressing the potential perils due to rain and wind. And potential storms. And, you know, we have seen in the last couple of years catastrophic flooding in Newark, in Wilmington, places that, when you get heavy rain, you tend to see, you know, some water issues.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing these 1,000-year storms every couple of years. Right. And, you know, there have been places in Delaware that have never flooded that have. So that's why we work with this Climate Resiliency Task Force mm-hmm. that addresses these issues across the country. You know, when you hear people say we need to deregulate certain industries, banking and insurance isn't one of them.
You talked about technology and specifically AI earlier. I want to talk a little bit more about that. And just, I guess, technology in general, because it's AI, obviously, the potential for bias is a big issue. There's also the issue, and we've seen it here in the state with data breaches and things like that. I mean, how big is that overall tech issue in terms of insurance?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question. We saw this issue years ago. And so we passed the cybersecurity model law in Delaware. And I say we, the General Assembly. But we wrote the bill that protects our data with respect to insurance companies. And we had a real fight with that because the General Assembly has in the past and since changed some of the laws for data protection. But they've left or carved out insurance for state-based regulators, for myself. So we put in robust rules for insurance companies with respect to protecting your data, with respect to if you have a data breach, they have to notify us within 3 days. And then they have to do things like offer identity checks with respect to your credit to make sure that if your data was stolen, that they pay for these types of services. You could have your laptop stolen out of your car. It happens, right? I hope it doesn't happen at a level that it used to. But we have companies and agencies now call us and say, our laptop was stolen. There's potential data on that laptop. We want you to know. Or they'll tell us that, there was a breach and it involves multiple states and it may be Delaware. I would rather them tell me that and say later on that, right. We're fortunate that Delaware wasn't impacted. Then to find out later on that, some data was taken.
Be proactive rather than reactive.
Yeah, self-report.
You mentioned in that answer a little bit about writing laws and kind of advocating for changes in regulation and policy in the state. How important is that role to being an effective insurance commissioner? And are there some areas you would think in this next 4 years, if you're elected, you would be focusing on in terms of changing regulation and policy?
Well, the number's 54. There were 54 insurance-related bills this year alone. Now, when we started, when I say we, our department, we have a legislative liaison who's in the General Assembly from January to June 30th because we work on pro-consumer bills, right? One bill last year was the foster kids who weren't able to purchase insurance. The foster family wasn't able to afford it. So the industry put together a pool of money to help foster kids, right? And it's not a large audience, but it helps people who really, really need it. The prescription drugs that deal with abortion or the codifying the protections of the ACA, which didn't happen this year. It happened a few years ago. Mm-hmm. We are looking into the future. It's critically important. So we learned, my first year we passed House Bill 80, and that was one that addressed credit score. The insurance companies were using things like your marital status, your education, your employment, your zip code, credit score. And we were able to prevent companies from using that for private auto and homeowners insurance because it was unfairly discriminatory, mm-hmm. right? But we had some bumps along the road to work that out. But we learned from that. So now every year in November, we bring in the stakeholders. So we bring in insurance companies and their lobbyists and their lawyers, and we talk about our legislative agenda moving into the next year. So we try to hash them out before we get into January and start working on those bills. And it's been very successful.
I want to talk about something. We're talking with all candidates across all the races, and that is this kind of time, and it kind of plays off what we were just talking about, I guess, a little bit. This is a time where there seems to be a stronger distrust of government, or perhaps even more specifically politicians, and calls for more transparency, more accountability. Beyond what we were just kind of talking about, are there roles for you, both your office and personally, to play in addressing those issues of transparency and accountability from government?
Sure. No, I mean, it's in many cases, it's justified, right? It's like any industry. You have a bad egg now and then, here and there, whether it's a physician or law enforcement, or it just happens. And so it's warranted. The scrutiny is warranted. And there's an expression that sunshine is the best disinfectant. And so our office, our checkbook is an open book. The truth is, people often, I think, politicians in most cases get into this business because it's not easy. You open up yourself and your family and others to scrutiny. But they get into the business because they want to help people. But you have some folks who get into this business because I don't know, they need a job, right? Or they think that if they have a title that comes with moxie or that comes with entitlements. For me, you treat people and talk to people like you're talking to your clergy, right? Or your grandparents. And it's always been a formula that works well for me. And so when you're truthful and honest and open about things, it's, you know, it makes the job much easier.
When we asked your Democratic opponent about this question, he did point to your office's $440,000 settlement of a harassment suit and the retaliation case that a jury ruled in your favor in June as indications with issues with accountability and transparency. Yeah. So I do feel obligated to give you a chance to respond to that and ask if those cases at all informed your approach to the way you operate your office.
Sure. So keep in mind that there was a settlement, right? So I can't get in a lot of details about
Understood.
It. But I can say, and what's been publicly expressed is 3 weeks into my administration, we started having challenges with people in the office, right? 3 weeks. And one case, it is absolutely true that was settled, but, and this is in the public record, it was multiple people who were sued. It wasn't the commissioner. Mm-hmm. It was myself, my deputy, a chief of staff, people in OMB, and DHR. And ultimately, yes, it was settled. But, you know, the way some of the local media portrayed it was that it was because of what Navarro did, right? And what I can tell you is that I never touched anyone's hair, right? We've proven that. But, you know, we're accountable for what some of the things that occurred in the office and outside the office, mm-hmm. right? So, yes, we did settle that case. There was a second case we took to court, right? Very costly, mm-hmm. right? It would have been much easier to just settle that one as well. But, and I know you mentioned it, but a jury, 9-0 ruled in our favor, mm-hmm. determined that what was reported was not true. And so I can say that maybe we should have took both cases to trial. I don't know. But what I can tell you is that after 7 years, I had to sit back and say absolutely nothing. Where in the second case, a person made all kinds of allegations and, you know, said that I refused to let her leave her office and a bunch of other things. Mm-hmm. And the jury heard the evidence, right? It was a week-long trial. And sided with us. And, you know, when you have a new administration, when I mentioned 3 weeks, mm-hmm. you're always going to have people who are friendly with, loyal to the previous administration, right? When you're the governor, you bring in your whole cabinet, right? Mm-hmm. Secretaries and things like that. Well, when you're the insurance commissioner, you bring in 5 people. And so, you know, we had challenges that took 7 years to resolve. But I think what's most important and what was often not covered in a way that I think should have been was that, you know, we were found to be, you know, not committing those things that were alleged.
Sure. I want to finish with a kind of back where we started, because we talked about you running for a third term as insurance commissioner. There was a bill introduced this year seeking a constitutional amendment for term limits on state offices like insurance commissioner, creating a two-term eight-year limit. So you're running for a third term. Do you think there should at some point be a term limit for this office? Have you thought about how long you intend to serve?
I haven't really thought about how long I intend to serve. I'm 54 years old. I'm still relatively young. The insurance industry considers me a young old, right? And that's true. But I really love what I do. You know, I don't do it because of the title. I do it because of the results that we're able to have for our community. I'm running for a third term. I haven't really put much thought into beyond that. But like I'm saying, or I said, I love what I'm doing because I'm making an impact.
Is conceptually, though, a term limit at some point, would it be like state auditor or state insurance commissioner? Do you think that conceptually maybe at some point it's good to have someone else step in?
Yes. Yes. I think, you know, fresh eyes, fresh ideas is always a good thing. But what you have to understand is this is such a complex job. When you talk about the solvency of insurance companies and the amount of risk-based capital they have to have in place to actually pay out claims, or all of the things that we have to do to ensure the financial stability of insurance companies so that the ultimate goal is that companies can pay claims, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's, whether it's insurance fraud or the consumer component, or the things that we've done for Spanish-speaking people, mm-hmm. With respect to our information, our tests, things that go out to the public. I mean, it's a lot. So when you change, you lose all of that institutional knowledge.
So there's a balance between experience and fresh eyes, like.
It is, and having experience is really critical in a job like this. This isn't something that somebody should wake up one day and say, you know what, I want to be insurance commissioner, because there's no real on-the-job training. You can work in industry and understand the industry side, but the regulatory side, the mm-hmm. the only way you would get potential on-the-job training is if somebody from the department, my deputy or chief of staff or someone else, decided to run for the office. So it certainly is a balance.
That's Democratic candidate for insurance commissioner Trinidad Navarro. Our full conversation with him is available at DelawarePublic.org. A reminder, we reached out to the Republican running for insurance commissioner Ralph Taylor, but were unable to schedule an interview with him. And stay with us. We continue our series of Races to Watch with a look at the Democratic primary in the 14th House District in Sussex County. That's next on The Green, here on Delaware Public Media.